The Maharal famously says that a Shabbos before the following week holds in it the power of that week. He explains that this is why it's called Shabbos Shuva, and why Shabbos HaGadol is called Shabbos HaGadol, because Shabbos Shuva holds in it the power of Yom Kippur, and Shabbos HaGadol holds in it the power of the Haggadah of the Gedula of Pesach. So I think that he explains that this is Hashem created the first 6 days, and then he created Shabbos, and then Shabbos sets into motion the following 6 days, and then comes the Shabbos, and then that sets the following 6 days into motion. So that's what it means, that each Shabbos holds the potential of the week to come, which means that this Shabbos holds the potential of Sukkos, which I think anybody who's driven around anywhere or walked around can see and feel. You know, you walk in the streets now of any Jewish city, any quasi-Jewish city, you feel Sukkos, whether it's people running around at midnight going to pick up a loved man's regim, or doing shopping for Yontef, or building Sukkos, or putting up Schach, or playing music. No matter where you are, you're feeling some of that. So I think it's definitely apropos that we talk about Sukkos. One question. So all of our Yamim Tovim commemorate one specific event, whether overtly or covertly. They all sort of have one unifying event. Pesach is obviously the most obvious. Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? Yom Kippur, we are commemorating, if you really get down into it, we're commemorating that what really happened on Yom Kippur was when Moshe Rabbeinu came down with the Luchos Shnias and told us that we were forgiven for the Chet HaEgel. Rosh Hashanah is a commemoration of Maimon Har Sinai. Rosh Hashanah is a commemoration of Maimon Har Sinai. Hanukkah is a commemoration of when we beat the Yevanim, and we rededicated the Beis HaMikdash. Purim is commemorating the specific days that we spent fighting our enemies, even though the story took place over a bunch of years. Sukkos, on the other hand, all we know about Sukkos is Kibbutz Sukkos Hashavti Es Bnei Yisrael. Hashem says, because I let the Jews live, I help the Jews live throughout their time in the Midbar, in Sukkos, in these little huts, or in the Anani HaKavod, whichever pshat you learn, that was something that happened day after day after day for 40 years straight. So is there what's the specific event? Why would Sukkos be the only Yontif that we don't have one specific event that we commemorate for it? For example, we don't have a Yontif commemorating the giving of the Mun, right, or the Be'er, or anything like that. So why would we have a Yontif commemorating the giving of the Anani HaKavod? That was something that was not one specific event. So, as it turns out, there actually, if you look, there is a specific event that Sukkos is commemorating, because it is no coincidence that as soon as the Jews leave Mitzrayim, the first pasuk that we hear is Vayisu b'nei Yisrael. This is in Shemais Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Lamed Zayin. If you want to look it up, it says Vayisu b'nei Yisrael me Ramses. The Jews traveled from Ramses. Sukkaisa. They went to Sukkais. Kishesh meis elef ragli ha-gevarim levad mitaf. 600,000 men, not including children. And it says Erev Rav went with them also, and they had their dough that they took with them. Ugeis matzahs kilei chametz. So it's like a mixture of Sukkos and Pesach, which I would like to, I think that both Sukkos and Pesach are commemorative of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Pesach focuses more on the food aspect, that we trusted in Hashem, even though we did not really have any food with us, that we did not have enough time for our bread to rise. We trusted that Hashem would provide for us in that way. And Sukkos was the exact same thing, just instead of with food, it's regards to shelter, right? If you break it down, those are pretty much the two most basic human needs, food and shelter. So we were relying on Hashem to give us both of those things, right? That's what the pasuk in Yeshayah is talking about. Lechtech acharei b'midbar be'aretz le'zeruah, that you went after, Hashem saying that my nation, you guys followed me into the desert. There was no food. There was no shelter. You knew that I would provide this for you. So Sukkos is the first place that they traveled, right when they left Mitzrayim, and they did not yet have the Anani HaKavod. The Anani HaKavod only came later. So if you want to point to one specific event that Sukkos, that the Yontif of Sukkos represents and commemorates, it's that first leap of faith that we took into Hashem's arms, right? We didn't really know what was coming. We had just met Hashem. Moshe told us about him a year earlier. That was it. We knew that the Jews of Mitzrayim had heard from Yaakov and from Yosef. Like, they heard that Hashem one day, Pakeid Yifkeit, Hashem's going to come get you. But we didn't really have any experience, or we'd been enslaved. The people that were born in Mitzrayim didn't really have that much to do with the Shvatim. They didn't know them. The Shibud only started after the Shvatim all died. So at best, they met them, or their parents or grandparents met them. But they didn't really have, like, they didn't really ever have a connection to Hashem the way the previous generations did. And still, Moshe says, I'm here as a messenger of Hashem. They jump into Hashem's arms and they run into the Midbar with him. And Hashem carries them to a place called Sukkos, and he takes care of them from there. But, like we said, they did not yet receive the Ananiya Kavod, so what Sukkos is commemorating is that leap of faith that we took into Hashem. But a few questions come up, because, number one, just a generic question, why Sukkos? Like, why this specific place called Sukkos? Number one, why couldn't Hashem have taken us straight to Har Sinai, or to, I don't know, there's a place called Yad Vasa, I don't know, in the Midbar, Hashem could have taken us to any place. Like, is there any specific reason about Sukkos, number one? Number two, if you look at Rashi, Rashi tells us that this place called Sukkos was 120 mil, which is roughly 90 miles, I believe. I once made the calculation. About 100, like between 90 and 100 miles from Ramses, from where they left. And Rashi says that they got there in 1 hour. They got there before Chatzais, right? They had just left Mitzrayim. They got there. Here. Rashi says, Kuf chaf mil hayu, uba usham lefi shah. It took him about an hour. Shinemar ve'esa eskam malkan fe'nisharim, and it carried you on eagle's wings. Oh, no, I don't have to feel bad because it ties into this week's parsha, right? This week's parsha says, Kinesher yotir kinay al goyza lov yirachif. There we go. That's the connection with this week's parsha, if you want an overt connection. Okay, now I'm yotze. So Hashem took us this 120 mil, took us an hour to get there. So I don't know exactly how it worked, but it was some sort of, they either took a step and they were all of a sudden there, or they felt themselves speeding through space to get there. But it can't, either it wasn't fun to travel at warp speed, or even if it was like a fun experience in some way, they felt like Hashem was taking care of them, like it's unnecessary. Because if you follow, they come back to Yam Suf the next, they're back at Yam Suf like the next day or a few days later. So that means they went all the way to Sukkos, then they came all the way back. Like, why? What's the point of taking them to Sukkos? That's question number two. Right, number one, why Sukkos as opposed to anywhere else? Number two, that question gets strengthened because why Sukkos if it's so far away? Obviously, it has some sort of deep meaning for the journey that the people were about to take. And the next question is, it says that the number of people, it says there were 600,000 men aside from children. Now, we know that whenever the Torah talks about men, it's excluding children. Men always mean somebody who's 20 years or older. So why is it talking, why does the Torah feel the need to say not including children? Levad mi tough. Like, what is that? Why is that there? I don't think there's anywhere else that it says that in the Torah. So let's take a little bit of a detour and come to the first place in the Torah where this town called Sukkos is mentioned. In Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov Avinu, after running away from his brother for 22 years, he finally meets up with him, and he sends him presents. He's nervous that he's going to kill him. Esav's coming to make war, and then after a conversation, a discussion, Esav sees his children, and he ends up, you know, liking, he ends up finding favor towards them, and he's doesn't try to kill Yaakov, and in fact he says the opposite. He says, "Vayemer nisa v'neilecha ve'elecha l'negdecha." Let's walk, let's travel together. Now that seems like just two people traveling together, but what we have to realize is that Esav now represents all of the Western world. So at the time he also represented that this proposition of Esav to Yaakov for them to travel together is basically a coming together, a complete coming together of Gashmius and Ruchnius in the world. Whether Esav meant it or not, we don't really know, but this definitely was not just two brothers that happened to be walking down the road together. This was a complete coming together of everything that was ever separated in the world. Ruchnius and Gashmius, right? Elam Haba and Elam Haza, all of this was finally about to come together when Esav says, let's travel together. And what does Yaakov say? He says, I would love to, but I can't. Listen, my children are very soft, he says, and I have a lot of cattle, and if we try to walk quickly with them, they're all going to die. He says, Esav, you go ahead of me, I'll walk slowly with my children, like I have to, and then I'll meet up with you one day in Seir, where you're going. And then Esav says, fine. Esav goes to Seir, and it says, V'yakov nasa sukaisa. Yaakov goes to this place called Sukkos, V'yivin lebayis u'mekneyo asa sukaisa. He makes a house. And he makes little huts, and Al Kain Kara Shem Hamakim Sukkos. That because of this, they called the name of the place Sukkos. Okay, so this is the first time that the city of Sukkos is mentioned, which really the only thing that happened there seems sort of secondary. It happened to be the place that Yaakov ended up after he denied to go travel with Esav. So I think on just a very fundamental, very basic level, I think that Hashem was taking us to Sukkos to give us a message. Here we were, a fledgling nation, terrified in a black desert in the middle of the night where there's, you know, like the Pasuk tells us, there's snakes and scorpions, there's wild animals, there's no civilization. They really had nothing to rely on but Hashem, and they threw themselves into Hashem's arm, they jump onto Hashem's bandwagon, so to speak. Hashem whisks them off to this place called Sukkos. Now they're looking around. They assumably remembered that Yaakov had been there, and they knew the significance of this place. This was the place where Yaakov pushed off, pulling together everything that was separate in the world between Yaakov and Esav to spend time with his family. He says, right now, my responsibility is for my family, for my future generations, and I am going to take the responsibility of taking care of them right now. I have to live in this place called Sukkos where I focus on my family. And I can't, even though Yaakov said I personally can walk as fast as you, Esav, I have people with me that I can't, and I'm responsible for them. So in a way, my sense of self extends beyond myself and to my children. And I am not able to go with you because I have to take care of them. So we can assume that the Jews, as soon as they got to this place called Sukkos, they see this, they remember this. And the message on the very basic level that Hashem was trying to give them was, don't think that you guys are going to die tomorrow just because you're in the desert. I'm bringing you to the place of continuity in Jewish tradition. You guys will have children and they will have children. And each person, the Jewish tradition and generations will continue on in the same way that Yaakov took the responsibility to take care of the people that he was responsible for. Hashem saying, I'm taking responsibility to take care of you. And as we see, a few days later, they got the Anani HaKavod. And Hashem did, in fact, take care of us for 40 days. That's, I think, on a very basic level. I think there's a much, much deeper, really fascinating thing that's happening here in Sukkos that I think is meant to transfer over to the whole Yontif of Sukkos as we have it. So, to add on a few things. So we know that Yaakov goes to Sukkos as soon as he splits up from Esav, right? Then what happens is from there he goes down to Mitzrayim, right? Right after this, it says we have the whole story with Yosef. Right after Yaakov splits up with Esav, we have the whole story with Yosef, and then he goes down to Mitzrayim. The Jews are in Mitzrayim for 210 years. Then when they come out, they go back to this place called Sukkos. So we have Yaakov in Sukkos, the Jews go down to Mitzrayim, then they go back to Sukkos. Then from Sukkos, they go wander in the desert for 40 years with the Anani HaKavod, which are commemorative of Hashem protecting us and taking care of us the same way Yaakov built Sukkos to take care of his family. So the Anani HaKavod are really a continuation of what Yaakov did. And then they have that for 40 years. Now we know that when Aaron dies, so at the end of the 40 years, that it says Vayishma Kanani Melech Arad, and that Aaron had died, right? It says the Kananim heard that Aaron died and they come to do war, and Rashi and all the Mefarshim say that it wasn't really the Kananim, it was Amalek. They had come to do war with us as soon as the Anani HaKavod left. They saw that our protection was gone. So it's almost, so if you think about it, Amalek and Esav, Amalek is the continuation of Esav. So as soon as Yaakov leaves Esav, he's able to go to Sukkos, which is to set up the prototype for the Anani HaKavod, which is to take responsibility for those that are under your care. Then we go down to Mitzrayim. As soon as we come out of Mitzrayim, Hashem takes care of us with the Anani HaKavod. And as soon as the Anani HaKavod leave, Amalek, who's the strain of Esav that never forgave us and never moved on, they come back to attack us. So it's almost as if these Anani HaKavod / Sukkos was what was holding them back, right? As soon as we leave from Esav, Yaakov sets up Anani HaKavod. As soon as we're vulnerable, Hashem gives us back the Anani HaKavod. And then as soon as they leave, Amalek attacks. So the Anani HaKavod was really the only thing that was pushing them off, the only thing that was holding them back. And I think that there's something really incredible whenever we fight with Amalek that will tell us the answer to why the Torah decided to tell us that when the Jews left Mitzrayim, it was 600,000 people, not including their children. So whenever we fight with Amalek, we always hear about the concept called Machar, right? Every single time. When Moshe tells Yeshua the first time that they fight with Amalek, it says, Machar anechi nitzav al reish hagiva, tomorrow I'm going to stand up on top of the valley. Don't fight with them today, fight with them tomorrow. When David HaMelech kills out Amalek, it says, I don't have the Hebrew, I'm sorry. It says, David killed them from the morning until the evening of the following day. It says, L'macharasam, until the next day. So David spent one day and also macharas. And the Medrash says that when Esther wanted to destroy Haman, she also used Machar. It says that she told Achashverosh, Yavei HaMelech v'Haman Machar, Gam Machar al Mishta Hayayin, I want you to come tomorrow. And then after, finally, on tomorrow is when Esther sets up Haman to get killed. So what's it's like whenever the Medrash actually says this, whenever we fight Amalek, we use the power of Machar. So to trace it all the way back, really, where it comes from is when Esav sold the Bechira. Right, the rationale he had for selling the Bechira was he said, tomorrow I'm going to die, what do I need the birthright for? Right, I'm going to die anyway, my tomorrow doesn't count, my tomorrow doesn't matter. That was the first time that Esav really abused the concept of tomorrow, because the way to live in this world the correct way is to have tomorrow in mind. Right, we're supposed to live in this world with the mindset of living for tomorrow, for Olam Haba, for the future world. And when Esav abused that concept and he threw away his tomorrow, Yaakov picked it up, and Yaakov assumed responsibility for taking care of the lifestyle of tomorrow. And Esav and Amalek are the ones that don't know how to use that. So our fight against them is always a fight of Machar. It's always how we focus on, literally means tomorrow, but it's really like a code word for us taking responsibility for both our own tomorrows, right? Our own Olam Haba and our own consistency and continuity, and also it's us taking responsibility for our families and our children, which is why Yaakov tells Esav to come back full circle. Now this is why Yaakov tells Esav, I can't travel with you, even though I technically can travel with you. I am bigger than you see. I'm bigger than just me. I am my children and my grandchildren and my great grandchildren all the way down. Right? There's dozens of stories with Gedolim like this, that they were able to teach a classroom of 10, 5, 15 kids one child, because they were all able to see. When I look at one child, I don't just see one child. I see him and his children and his grandchildren and his great-grandchildren. I see him and all of his machars. I see all of his tomorrows. We're not just one little person here. We are each ourselves plus more, right? We all have a continuity inside of us that comes out. And I think that that is why Yaakov splits up from Esav, because I can't go with you, because I'm taking care of my family, who is my continuity, who is my machar. And that's exactly why Hashem takes us to Sukkot, to say, I am going to make you guys continuous. This is the beginning of a Jewish nation that's going to last through history. I will take care of you forever, right? Which is exactly why the Pasuk chooses to say, Hashem wrote the Pasuk to say, Vayisu b'nei Yisrael meramsei Sukkai. So they go to Sukkai. Kashesh me'as elef ragli ha-givarim. It was 600,000 men. Levad mitaf, not including children. Yes, the men, there was a lot of men there. But don't forget, this is not including the children. Meaning, focus on the children. Aside from whatever you know here, also the children were involved, right? The children are almost like the main point. That's the fledgling nation that we were, the message that we're supposed to get as that first night when we jump into the desert where we don't really have that much to rely on, is to know that I'm here to take care of my family and my future generations. And I think that Sukkot is a time when we move our entire house and our family out into the wild, and we have this extra sense of responsibility to take care of them. It's also Chag HaAsif, when each person would gather in his own grain, and now was the time that he would take care of his family like that. And I think that the message for us to live with on Sukkot is this one, that it is now a time for us to realize, after we came out of Rosh Hashanah, after we came out of Yom Kippur, that we are bigger than ourselves, that we also, each of us, have within us both personal continuity and future generations of continuity to take care of. And that's our responsibility, and that is what Yaakov Avinu and subsequently HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to teach us by settling us in Sukkot that first night. And I think that is the specific event that Sukkot is commemorating. Have a good Shabbos and a wonderful, wonderful Yom Tov.